global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. U.S. stock index futures are little changed to higher, with stocks heading for their first monthly gain in four after a rally that took the S&P 500 index to this year's high. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures are up 1.5 points now. Dow E-mini futures up 10. The Nasdaq E-mini futures up 1. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32. The yield 1.81%. Yield on the 2-year 0.74%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.3% or 11 cents to $38.42 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.8% or $10 to $12.3860 an ounce. The euro $1.1386 and the yen is at 112.27. Micron Technology down 2% this morning after the U.S.'s largest maker of memory chips gave a fiscal third-quarter forecast that missed analyst estimates due to weaker demand for personal computer components. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Barry.
Karen, thanks so much. Richard Batley is out of the combine at the London School of Economics and Economic History, which is exceptionally prodigious. He actually knows the distinction between Robbins and Beveridge, which is pretty cool. He is with Charles Dumont, Lombard's Turk Research, and joins us right now. Richard, you have written one of the smartest notes on Brexit that I've seen, and you go right to the Euro challenge that maybe Brexit is really about Frexit. How likely is it that continental Europe does their various shades of exit?
Yeah, I think we think the main market risk, the sort of investment risk of what's happening in the UK isn't related to the UK. It's what's going on in France, and the fact that you have politics in France today looks very similar to what you saw in Britain sort of 3 or maybe 4 years ago. You've got this sort of fringe right-wing party in France. It's the National Front that has one of its main policies to have a referendum on EU membership, just as you had UKIP in the UK. And I don't think the risk, you know, there was never a risk of a UKIP government in the UK, just as there isn't realistically a serious possibility of a National Front presidency in France. But it's that the centre-right party takes some of those policies on board, like especially the referendum, and makes it their own in order to stem the rise of that. And I think that's why, for example, the day after the referendum was announced in the UK, sure, you saw UK CDS sell off, but you saw French CDS sell off more in response to the announcement. I think some investors do get this and understand that.
So Richard, for us ugly Americans, the question I keep hearing from people about Brexit is, wait, the UK isn't part of the euro. Why would it matter all that much to the regional economy if they have a referendum about exiting the euro land?
I think that's exactly the right question to ask, because I don't think it does matter that much, actually. It certainly matters a lot less than politicians on both sides of the debate are sort of like almost willing it to be more important than it is. I think there is a risk to the referendum, an economic risk related to the referendum in the UK, but it's short term and it's cyclical in nature. Now, unlike, this is where the economic situation in the position in the cycle in the UK is very different to the US, although there are lots of surface similarities between the two economies. The consumer cycle in the UK is very mature. This is precisely the point in a sort of a typical UK cycle when you would want business investment growth to be replacing consumer-led growth that we've had for the last 5 or 6 years in the UK. The data this morning showed the household savings rate in the UK at an all-time low, and you're introducing a big dose of business uncertainty, so at the worst possible time in the cycle. We put this through our UK model, which we review every quarter, putting a number of assumptions about sort of a worst reasonable case that we could come up with for Brexit, and we thought growth could be 0.5% lower this year, next year 1.1% lower. The CBI, the Confederation for British Industry, in the UK did a similar exercise. They came up with a range of GDP being 0.8 to 1.4% lower next year. So, you know, broadly agreeing with that. So I think there are these two distinct phases. There's the first phase where, yes, there is that uncertainty and it does provide a big shock to business investment and you do see growth lower. But then longer term, you're absolutely right. It is difficult to come up with a scenario which has a very big or a very big positive or negative effect on trend GDP growth. We've done that. We think, you know, we would say in 20, right. You know, if you are as positive or as negative about this as you could be, then in 20 years' time, UK GDP could be 2% higher or it could be 2%.
Yeah.
Well, not the trend rate of GDP, the level. So, you know, these aren't, you know, this isn't the stuff that the economic fate of nations rests on.
Give me an update on the Lombard Street Research call on an animal spirit, the nominal GDP of the world. I mean, we're seeing everybody marked down. AJ Rajadox was just on from Barclays. They marked down to an optimistic 3.1%. Others are way below that. Where are you people on global recession?
I think that we're in a very unusual position in the global economy, and it's very different to what lots of what all investors have been used to their entire, you know, investment careers, really, where we have this unusual situation where there is positive real growth globally, and of course, especially within the United States, positive real growth. But then you see, you know, big pockets of severe deflation, of falling prices. And I think, you know, when we're speaking to our clients, when we're speaking to investors, a lot of the questions that we get come down to this, you know, if you take the essence of the question is basically, you know, how can this be? How can we have real growth and deflation at the same time? One of these must win. You know, either the real growth continues and ultimately becomes reflationary, or the deflation causes some sort of financial crisis and ends real growth. And our point is that, you know, that premise is totally wrong. That, you know, that after 50 years of real growth and inflation being positively correlated, we're now in a model of global growth where you have to see deflation in some sectors of the global economy in order to generate the real growth in other sectors. So, yes, I think a growth figure of around 3%, perhaps a little bit north of 3%, is absolutely right. That doesn't mean, though, that the global deflationary pressures that, you know, that so affect nominal investment returns in a number of ways are going to go away. They aren't a critical, you know, something that an investment implication of that change in the growth model is that the earnings cycle has become disjointed from the real economic cycle. And that's, I think, you know, that's what was worrying investors a lot, especially in January and February this year.
In the time we've got left with you to rip up the script here and out of your LSE economic history, if you look at a log chart right now of world trade, it's breathtaking how flat it's become and for how chronically long it's become. Is there a risk here of the regional blocks of the 1930s, of the time of Lionel Robbins, the 40s, the 50s?
Yes. I mean, I think this is the fascinating point, and this is when we're thinking about the risks to, you know, a small open economy like the UK, the risks aren't, you know, the big risk to trade isn't are we in or out of the EU. There are big risks there, and it is absolutely what you've been talking about, that there is an apparent sort of, there appears to be an end to that process of globalization, which again has been, you know, is all we've known, really, all everybody has known for the last 50 or 60 years of trade, you know, of trade growing at a faster rate than GDP and the global economy becoming more globalized, that seemed to end almost, you know, with a bang, with the financial crisis. I think to an extent, why is that? Well, it exposed the very fragile credit dependent nature of a lot of that trade. But then more worrying looking forward, it's thrown up politicians all around the world, and of course particularly prominently in the United States, politicians that are opposed to the, you know, what has been that accepted wisdom of globalization over the last 50 or 60 years, that yes, like you saw a drift toward economic nationalism in the mid-30s, that, you know, with something of a lag compared to when the Depression occurred, that you're seeing the same thing happen today, again with something of a lag to when the actual recession happened.
Now, let's leave it there. Richard Battley, thank you so much, with Charles Dumas, Lombard Street Research. Really, to give you some different perspectives, folks, here, end of quarter, the surprises of the first quarter, but particularly the look forward. Barry, Global Wall Street, as we were talking with Bob Cinch about, it's got to be one of the themes. You, the cover of the FT today, the many articles Christine Harper and Michael Moore are doing for Bloomberg News, is state of employment.
That's
key. Our core audience.
Okay,
it's a huge deal.
That's absolutely key, and we're going to find more information tomorrow about the state of the U.S. employment, especially after those strong ADP numbers yesterday. I'm looking forward to hearing what Bill Gross has to say after we get the non-farm payrolls.
And his note as well, after the discussion of payrolls, we will address Mr. Gross's basic idea, which is, Janet, get going, because the markets are going to get going for you. It was a terse note from Bill Gross. Jim Glassman and Bill Gross joining us tomorrow. In 2 hours at 9:45, Kathleen Hayes and Charles Evans of Chicago. It's Bloomberg Surveillance.